Hello and welcome to the State-Based Reporting and Healthcare Conference Call, an initiative organized by the National Quality Forum with support from the Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality. Please note if you're calling from a state agency and not able to talk during today's discussion, please press *0 and you can be transferred by the operator to the speaker's line. This call is being recorded. I would now like to give the proceedings to Dr. Peter Angood to begin today's discussion.
Good day, everybody, and thanks so much for joining us again for this state-based reporting initiative. This is an ongoing series of conference calls that we've been hosting, and our successes so far have been very exciting. I think since the last time we had called, though, we had a small detour in healthcare, and that was a midterm election. So we're all now sitting with bated breath, waiting to see where healthcare goes over the next few months. But it will not detract or distract what we're trying to accomplish here today. We have a good attendee rate today again, which I think is an indicator for all of us about the interest for this particular initiative, which started as a small grassroots type of activity. And as we go through today's agenda, we'll have further discussions on how we hope to move forward. In brief, today's agenda will be, after these introductory comments, roll call by Eric, and then we'll move into some state updates, and then we'll have some discussion on a survey that we did with you folks and give you some results of that. And then we're going to add another item on the agenda, which is not listed, and that is some open discussion on future steps moving forward. I'm going to ask for Eric Colchinara to do a brief roll call, and then I'll provide a few more introductory comments following that, and then we'll get our state updates and we'll move on from there. So, Eric?
Terrific. Thanks, Peter. As I go through names of the folks on our working group, if you hear your state being listed, please, you're not the particular person, please do indicate it. So I know we have some folks on the phone from California, but Kathleen Billingsley is not there. Keith Shalom, are you on the call?
Yes, I am.
Terrific. And do we have anyone else from California?
Yes, we do have Tom Lee and Jim Booth, too.
Yes, we're both on.
Welcome. Hope things are well out in Sacramento.
All right.
From Massachusetts, I know Elizabeth Dake was not going to be able to join us. Carla?
Right, Searcher? Carla Sasertia.
Terrific. Thank you so much. Pennsylvania, Mike Deering, have you been able to join us as of yet?
Mike is not able to make it. This is Laurie Baker, and Howard Neustadt is also here from the office.
Terrific. And Ms. Mitchell, are you on the line? Did I hear you join us?
Yes, I'm here.
Terrific. Welcome. From Illinois, Mary Driscoll or Barbara Fisher?
This is Mary. I'm here. I think Barbara is also on the line. Yes.
Terrific. Welcome. Oregon, Sydney Edlund.
Yes, I'm here.
Welcome, Sydney. Maine, Ann Flanagan.
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Welcome. Washington State, Linda Furquet.
Yes, I'm here, Eric.
Hey, Linda. Things are well out there in Olympia. Florida, Marie Kokel.
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Marie. New Jersey, Margaret Lumia. Mary Noble.
Mary's here.
Hi, Mary. South Carolina, Shara Merritt. Ms. Mitchell is joining us from Pennsylvania. Dr. Montero from New Hampshire.
Yep, here.
Welcome. New York.
Ruth is here.
Welcome, Ruth. Colorado. Do we have anyone joining us from Colorado online? Sue Neff. Ms. Johnson. Okay, no one from Colorado. Mary from New Jersey. Georgia. Leslie Poole. Tennessee, Ann Reed.
Here.
Hi, Ann. Minnesota, Diane Rydrick.
Yes.
Hi, Diane. Kansas, Lynn Searles. Ohio, Kalia Shaheen just emailed me, said she would not be able to join us. Rhode Island, Darlene Skorsky. Anyone from Nevada, Julia Spalding, Jay?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, Julia. South Dakota, Bob Stahl. Okay, Connecticut, Cheryl Terrio.
Hi, this is John Olson for Cheryl.
Terrific. Welcome, John. Thanks again for joining us. Utah, Iona Tryon.
Yes.
Hi, Iona. Maryland, Renee Webster.
I'm here.
Hi, Renee. Indiana, Terry Whitson.
Terry's here.
Hi, Terry. And the District of Columbia, Dr. Woldu. Not able to join us at the moment. Terrific. And then are there any other states, folks in the speaker's line, folks I did not mention?
Lois Sater from Wisconsin.
Terrific. Hi, welcome, Lois.
Were you asking for speakers?
No, just any other states, any other folks on the conference line, folks whose name I did not mention?
I didn't know if you mentioned Dr. Nate Smith from Arkansas. I'm here for him. Catherine Tapp from Arkansas.
Terrific. Thank you, Catherine.
And Andrea Alvarez from Virginia is here.
Hi.
As well. Hi.
Andrea. Welcome. So a solid group of some of the folks who have been with us in the past, and always great to hear some newer folks as well.
Great. Thanks very much, Eric. Yep. Thanks very much, Eric. And, again, welcome, everyone. The agenda for today has basically, as I mentioned, the updates from a few states, some review of some survey results, and then another item about future steps moving forward. Before we do that, I just want to reflect on our evolution very briefly. This whole convening activity began as we were doing some background work for our framework report that was recently finalized and approved by the board. That report is on public reporting of patient safety events. We have, in that time of doing the homework, recognized that there are these several states doing work together, doing work but not necessarily working together, and there wasn't necessarily a connection between the different state initiatives and federal agency initiatives. So we held a meeting 1 year ago, basically. We had some conference calls, and we've had a follow-up meeting sponsored by AHRQ in the early summer, and we've had some ongoing phone calls since that time. The two face-to-face meetings and the conference calls helped us recognize that there really is a need for a platform where the individual states can come together, compare notes, look for ways to share information on how things can be done better, how to correct things that aren't working quite well, and to also look for opportunities to perhaps work and share together. Similarly, we at NQF have come to recognize the pivotal role that AHRQ is moving along with in terms of the development of the Patient Safety Organization Initiative and the development of the common formats to help with the reporting for the PSO initiative. And we've also had ongoing good relations with the Office of Healthcare Quality with their specific initiative on the HAI Action Plan, as well as with CMS and CDC and a couple of other agencies as well. We have been doing this work under our grant at NQF with the Department of Health and Human Services, and we're looking forward to continuing this work during the coming year. We're just finalizing those budget strategies, and we'll provide you with more of that update at the next meeting. Now, in planning for this particular call, it became evident to us at NQF and then in further discussions with those at ARC that we wanted to make sure there was more in the way of frontline inputs on the ongoing evolution of this convening activity. And so in an effort to do that, we've decided that we wanted to bring some co-chairs from the different state-based initiatives into place. The co-chairs will help to devise the agendas meeting by meeting, as well as to work with the other state-based representatives in terms of devising future agenda strategies and tactics for how this whole initiative can move along. it's not really optimal for folks like us at NQF or specifically looking for input from you folks. And the individuals at ARC, Bill Mounier, Amy Helwig, and others felt that, yes, it would be good to get frontline input and to have more direction provided for how this initiative moves forward by individuals at the front line. So after some discussion and review and deliberations, we've approached three individuals to be co-chairs for us, and they have each agreed. We have asked Diane Rydrick, Iona Thring, and Mike Doring to help us out as co-chairs. We've asked for three because we recognize everyone's busy and not everyone's going to be able to attend all of the time. Iona is going to be able to be with us for all of this call today. Mike hopefully will come in a little bit later, and Diane is going to be off in a few minutes as a perfect example of why you need three co-chairs. We've spoken with them individually as well as collectively, and the added agenda item, which probably Iona will lead most of the discussion on later today, is possible future directions. It's not meant to be a definitive discussion today, but just to begin opening the door, opening the discussion, get the ideas flowing. And obviously, Eric and myself at NQF will continue to provide support and inputs and direction from our perspective, as will the folks at ARC with Bill Mounier and Amy Helwig and Diane Cousins. We're not sort of dumping and running. We're trying to move so that it becomes more of a collective thought process and platform so that the states can continue looking at ways to collaborate and share, and that we continue opening that communication channel in from the states to the federal agencies and back. It's a bidirectional flow. So I wanted to take those few moments to introduce that today, and we will make sure that any of you who have a desire to communicate with Diane, Iona, or Mike will make sure that you're able to do that. The three of them have been very generous in agreeing to do this and recognize it as an opportunity to move this whole initiative forward another level. So having said that, though, I want to move into the regular flow of the agenda for today. As has been our practice on these calls, we want to make sure that there's a rotating series of updates for different states. And so on today's call, we're going to hear three updates from New Hampshire, from Tennessee, and from New York State. And then we're also going to have Eric provide some survey results and some comments from Renee Webster from Maryland on some of that information. And then we'll follow on with some comments by Iona and possibly Mike. And that'll be a good opportunity for open discussion through all of that stuff. This is not to be kind of a one-flow discussion. It's an open discussion all the way. So with that, Jose Montero, Ann Reed, and Ruth Leslie have each agreed to provide us with some updates, and we'll go in that order. So, Jose, if you don't mind, that'd be great.
Okay. Thank you very much. Good afternoon. I feel a little odd presenting this group because the system that we have is, I would say, at this stage of the game, incredibly primitive. The state has chosen to go in two separate ways for things that try to achieve the same goals in healthcare quality. For the component that has to do with infections, we are piggybacking on the NHSN, and we choose several different indicators and are getting that information through that particular system. We have all hospitals reporting right now, and we actually had our first report published back in August with information for the whole last year. For the adverse events component, we had a whole different system and a whole different legislation. last year we got this new bill passed as law. It's called the Adverse Events Reporting System that became effective January 1st, 2010, and mandates all hospitals and ambulatory surgical centers to report adverse events. They basically, the legislation took one of the lists that the National Quality Forum developed and basically put it in the legislation. So we have the standard categories and indicators that have been developed by the organization. But what makes it interesting is that our legislation has a couple of components. It says, following the occurrence of an adverse healthcare event, the facility shall conduct a root cause analysis of the event. So if the facility is not the department, they should implement a corrective action plan to implement the findings of the analysis and report to the commissioner reasons for not taking corrective action if that's the case. And they should send us copy of the plan within 60 days of the event. So it may be that we don't find about something going on in a hospital or in an ambulatory surgical center until 60 days because they will send it with actually the root cause analysis. The next piece of the legislation says the reporting system shall not be designed to punish errors by healthcare practitioners or healthcare facility employees. And the thing that they report are basically the name of the event and the root cause analysis and the information that they are going to, the thing that they're going to implement. And we are supposed to do an annual report, and that is the extent of the mandate. This year, first year of this system, basically we develop a basic piece of paper form where we ask the hospitals to tell us just that, exactly. So what was the event, what else, I'm sorry, I just dropped the phone. When the event was discovered, what department, patient gender, the admitting diagnosis, location of the patient and the hospital, and a brief event description, and that's it. So far this year, we have had, as of last month, 34 different events reported, a third of which are related to stage 3 and 4 ulcers. And nine, that almost another third is due to falls. We will have a report of this information early on next year. We don't have a validation system. We don't have a quality control system. We don't have anybody who actually goes into the facilities to review these events or the reports. And the law tells us that we need to send, actually, you guys, the report. We need to send a report to the National Quality Forum, and we need to monitor what you are doing. So when the survey came a couple of weeks ago, I had this funny feeling that my answers were not really great, but we don't have a validation system. We don't have a control system. We just get the information that the facilities give us, and read the report. If we like it, that's fine. If we don't, I guess that's kind of fine too. And that's where we are at. As I said, it's a system that is completely different in approach and intent from what we have with the hospital-acquired infections, or I'm sorry, let me rephrase that, healthcare-acquired infections, where we look at those every quarter and provide feedback to the hospitals and check with them improvement activities. And we are developing validation systems for the data, and so on and so forth. So that is what we have.
Great. Thanks, Jose. Any questions for Jose from anybody on the conference? Again, this is opportunity time to get clarifications, add suggestions from what you've heard, offer encouragement for an early stage program.
We will be looking for help as soon as we get the system more mature after the first year and we look up everything that came in. Certainly we are tracking what is being discussed here and what you guys are proposing. Because as soon as we go public with information from the report, my guess is that some changes are going to be suggested. I don't know how that will play within the new legislature, but that's, I guess, something that I will find out next year.
Great. Thanks, Jose. Well, certainly it's always gratifying to see a state get off the ground and you've got some momentum happening, so good luck, and we'll ask you for another update in the future. Thanks, Jose.
Sure. Welcome.
Ann Reed, are you ready to go there from Tennessee?
I am. I don't think
you
have near as much to say as Jose did. Our program is pretty much status quo from, I guess, the first conference call that I was a part of in describing what our state does. We used to do much like what kind of what Jose outlined, but we a couple of years ago scaled back our unusual incident reporting system to just basically your abuse, misappropriation of funds, fires in facilities, and so we don't have any need for the corrective action plans any longer. There is not that extensiveness to our program any longer. We're not collecting any data. There's no statutorily requirements there for us to collect any data based upon the change in this program. We do have a statistician that can at any time if we do need to collect some data on those things that are required by law to be reported. We can get that data, you know, pulled out to look at and to give it some review and some analysis. But with any changes since the last time, we have been none, and we're really just status quo.
Okay, that's great. Any questions or comments for Ann?
Actually, I have a question for Ann. This is Carla Cesarcia from the Department of Public Health in Massachusetts. So how many events are on your reportable list?
If you'll hang on a second.
I'm just kind of curious.
We used to have a
long list. Much longer list.
Very long list. And it changed drastically. See if I can get this statute pulled up rather quickly for you to let you know.
While Ann's looking at that, I'll make a brief comment just to let everybody know and remind you that on December 1st, so in a couple of days, the NQF revised list of serious reportable events that we've been working on all year will be up for public comment. And we have three items on that list being suggested for being retired as solitary SREs and being moved into some of the broader-based categories. And those three are the hypoglycemia, the death or disability after spinal manipulation, and the carnicterus one. And then we are possibly adding a few for a new net total of 29 serious reportable events. We have also expanded into non-hospital settings into three areas, and that is the office-based physician practices, ambulatory or office-based surgery, and long-term care, specifically skilled nursing facilities. So it's important that we receive inputs from folks on this call because it will obviously affect your own systems to some degree or potentially affect them. So we can get that little plug in there. Ann, have you found your list there?
Yes, I've got that list. And I will say that what this our unusual event reporting system used to be coined as the Health Data Reporting Act of 2002. That's what started it all, with this very extensive list of incidences to report. That then, in 2009, that whole section was deleted, so the Health Data Reporting Act of 2002 essentially went away. There was an amending to it for some definitions and identified what needed to be reported, and those were misappropriation of patient property, abuse, neglect, and then strike by the staff at the facility, which carried over from, and all these did carry over from the old, external disaster impacting the facility, disruption of any service vital to the continued safe operation of the facility or to the health and safety of its patients and personnel, and fires at the facility that disrupt the provision of patient care services or causes harm to the patients or staff, or that are reported by the facility to an entity, including but not limited to a fire department charged with preventing fires, and that is it.
Quite a change. Wow.
Thank you.
Very big change.
This is like, so this sounds like either more of a just a historical regulatory approach or epidemiological approach. Is it, where is it located currently in your health department?
Unusual incident reporting.
Yeah.
They come into our department, and we're in the Department of Health, the Division of Healthcare Facilities.
Okay, so you're the regulatory arm of the department.
Yes, right. And so that's where they come in. You know, all the incidents come in through we have a QA, QI section of folks, and that's where our complaints and the incidents has come through.
Okay.
Did you ever at one time, oh, sorry. Did
no,
you ever
no,
at one time, oh. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
No, this is Peter, just trying to move it along, but you've got more comments, so please move.
No, I was just going to say, did Tennessee ever adopt the NQF list at one time?
I don't think so, because the only other legislation that there was that I'm aware of is this that was in 2002 that initiated the Health Data Reporting Act, which had that extensive list.
Okay, thank you.
Great. Thanks so much, Ann. I appreciate it, and we'll keep an eye on what you guys are up to.
Thanks.
And Ruth, lastly, are you able to provide some comments now?
Yes. Hi. Thank you for asking me to report out today. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Ruth Leslie. I'm from the New York State Department of Health. We have had a mandatory statutorily required incident reporting system in New York for many, many years. In 95, we went to a web-based reporting system. To speak to one of the last questions that were that was asked of Tennessee, our reporting system is situated in our regulatory branch of the Department of Health, and our statute really speaks, showing its age a little bit, but really speaks to the reporting aspect of incident reporting only. I will tell you that the last couple of years in New York for incident reporting has been challenging. I think at the last conference that NQF attended, I was telling you all a little bit about that, the Senate hearing that we got invited to by members of our legislature to testify about how our system operates and how we do things. We have had financial and staffing challenges along the way, which I'm sure is no news to any of you. But what we are really challenged with right now is figuring out what the future of our incident reporting system is going to be. We have a statute that speaks to reporting only and is regulatory in nature, but as the patient safety movement has marched on and our statute has not, we're really in a position now where we're considering some changes in how, information comes into the Department of Health. We are you know, that has political implications to it that we are not sure how exactly they're going to shake out at this moment. And I'm sure the rest of you can identify with that. But we are really grappling with three major questions. The first, what do we want our incident reporting system to be? Do we want it to be regulatory? Do we want it to be patient safety only? Or do we want it to be both in some way, shape, or form? And if so, how do we successfully pull that off without making it confusing for the hospitals and frankly, ourselves? Second major issue is how are we ensuring completeness of reporting? That continues to be a huge issue for all incident reporting systems. I know we discussed at that conference the difficulty in making sure at least taking a crack at ensuring that we're getting all the reports that need to come to us, but it's a challenging indeed to prove it or to even come close. So sometimes we get taken to task about that particular subject in the political arena, but also in the media. And thirdly, how do we make the information meaningful? We in our system collect at this point 31 distinct categories. Not all of those require RCA, but quite a few of them do. So how do we do meaningful analysis on those events and then turn them out to the facilities in a timely and meaningful way? This is an area where we are having the most trouble with, I would say, recently due to staffing constraints and other reasons. So we are really grappling with this one to make sure that our facilities, to encourage them to report, they'd like some return on their investment. So we're currently struggling with all of these issues and more. And certainly, if anyone has had these experiences and has had a successful resolution to any of them, boy, I would certainly like to talk to you or exchange emails or something, exchange ideas, because all are quite daunting at the moment.
Great report, Ruth. Thanks so much. And it's actually reassuring to hear how you sort of frame it up, how, you know, patient safety has moved forward and the quality arena has moved forward, but it's time to re-review some of these statutes that occasionally get caught, and you wind up in sort of an airlock, if you will, without being able to move forward contemporarily. So I think that's a positive, good next step for New York State. We'll all be watching that one closely. Any other states or folks representing states on the line who are in a similar stage as what Ruth just described?
This is Sydney from Oregon, and I have to say I love the way you frame that, and that sounds to me like exactly where we are.
And how are you guys sort of addressing it at this stage?
Well, we're going through a transitional period because our administrator, Jim Dameron, is retiring in January, and so we'll have a new administrator, and so that'll really shake things up, and I don't really know exactly what will happen at that point.
Sure. Other comments? Go ahead.
This is Mary Driscoll from Illinois. We're not in a similar stage, actually. We're still trying to get our law implemented. And we wrote an RFP, and it finally passed the governor's office. And now it's hung up in our central management services. And we're hoping to get it out of there soon so we can at least post the RFP for a vendor to do some electronic stuff so we can receive reports and send back reports for us by January. Our law is almost exactly like Minnesota's, which makes us not regulatory, but more working with the hospitals to figure out what their root causes are, what corrective action plans could be, and how to monitor measures of success. We are very anxious to implement our law. We think it would be a real positive addition to our current hospital report card, where we already report healthcare-associated infections using NHSN. However, because of the delay in our law, we have been met with the patient safety organization, and I'm not sure how other states are dealing with this, but our hospital association, both of our hospital associations, we have one for Greater Chicago and one, the Illinois Hospital Association, have joined together to form a patient safety organization, and we must work with them. I think there's no way out of it. I mean, even if there was, we wouldn't want it. I think we have to work with them, but then we have to carve out our roles, and then we're faced with the fox and the hen house phenomenon as well. So I'm just wondering if other states are dealing with this patient safety organization issue with their hospital associations and how they've ironed it out. I mean, we're committed to working with them and working together, but we just have to figure out the role of the state and how we're unique, et cetera, et cetera. So I'd be happy to hear from others who are in this dilemma.
Can I ask a question? This is Jose. I'm sorry, to the New York person, you said that you have this reporting system in the regulatory side of the house. How do you manage that? Because we have the same situation here, and because we didn't create a separate database or system, the information, trying to keep the information separate from those who do the licensing and inspections, and with this focus on patient safety versus the punishing part, it become quite complicated. And a point to the person who would just ask, how do you work with the groups is, in New Hampshire we have a healthcare quality commission that actually is staffed by the hospital association, and we work with them, and that has been our place. Actually, we did have the quality commission before we had this particular piece of legislation, so some of the issues were being addressed there before. So two separate things. Thank you.
Yeah. Hi, Jose. This is Ruth Leslie from New York. You raise one of the most difficult issues that we are grappling with, and that is, again, going to the question of what do we want our system to be? Do we want it to be regulatory? Do we want it to be patient safety-minded, or do we want it to be both? Because I can tell you right now in New York State, it is very, very definitely both. We, the same regulatory staff read the reports, interact with the facilities, and at times, and the most egregious events that we get, do go out and have a look at the events surrounded that adverse event report, and at times have even cited for care issues. Now, I imagine that all of you that have systems that are separate and distinct are groaning aloud to hear that but I can tell you that it is a very difficult thing because it's confusing for the facilities who look at the system as capturing their quality assurance work and then reporting it to the Department of Health. And at times, when we do use it for, take that in as a trigger, we're notified of that event, but then if we go out and do some investigative work, they become at times very upset about that. As Dr. Angood said, is the patient safety movement has moved on, it's caused us to think about very carefully about how we're administering and triaging our events in our system. So it is a very difficult and sensitive issue that you raise, Jose.
This is Renee in Maryland. We have dealt with that situation as well with our system. And It can be a challenge. In Maryland, if the hospital reports an event, we do not have to go out on it, although sometimes that does cause some contention with CMS. But in but if we get a complaint on it, then we, on a, that event, we will go out and review that event. And actually, we get very little carryover of that. Only about 30 of those over the past 6 years have actually been duplicated as both complaints and adverse events. Mm-hmm. But we've been able to, I think we've done a reasonably good job of trying to juggle the two hats in the same agency. I do have one person who designated to do review all the RCAs that are submitted, but she does not, and she generally does not do the complaint investigations if we do get a complaint on that event. So it can work, and I'd be glad to talk with any of you about the differences in our laws and how we work with it. If you know, especially for you agencies that are just started, the state agencies are just starting to go in this route, you know, like Illinois and New Hampshire.
I've been on your website and reading your information, so I have found it very helpful. Thank you.
Great. Other comments or any questions to either Jose, Ann, or further ones to Luke?
Yeah, this is Laurie Baker from the Pennsylvania Patient Safety Authority. We've dealt with all those issues as well, round and round. I want to give, unfortunately, Mike Deering could not make it today, but I do want to give his email address to those who may, you know, want to question, pose that question to him via email. And certainly you can call me and I can direct those calls as well. I don't know when the appropriate time would be to do that, if you want to do that at the end of the call or what. I just didn't want to not address all those questions.
Go ahead if you want to give out that email right now. That'd be fine.
It's mdeering, D-O-E-R-I-N-G, at state.pa.us. And or you can call me at 717-346-1092.
Great. Thanks so much.
Sure.
This is Iona. I'm going to use a little bit of a different tact here. And when we set up the patient safety program, it was negotiated with the hospital association and the medical association and our local CIO. It was set up as two separate rules with the firewall between patient safety and the regulatory unit, specifically to prevent some of this tension that you're describing. However, I have found as moving forward, sort of a different opportunity in that as we've tried to embed patient safety throughout the Department of Health as a whole, and we've been working with the perinatal mortality and morbidity group, and theirs is a traditional M&M kind of case approach to issues related to maternal and infant death. And as we try to help reframe that more towards a patient safety effort, we've had cases where about 50% of the time they've identified a case through chart review that their committee has estimated is probably a patient safety event, could have been prevented, that they will refer to me. I then verify whether or not the system has identified it as a sentinel event or not. And about 50% of the cases they have, and about 50% of the cases they have not. And that has functioned sort of as a verification, at least in this very small domain related to perinatal death, in terms of how the facilities see events versus how an outside review would see events. And then our patient safety program has then functioned as a facilitator between the review group committee and the facility to have a dialogue about why the differences of opinion, why when experts would look back and do this case review, they would determine this is preventable and was a safety event versus why the facility did not see it that way. And that has resulted in a number of opportunities to bring some expert opinion to the table, particularly in the cases of smaller community hospitals, training opportunities, case presentation opportunities, et cetera. So
in sort of that regard, the regulatory component can provide some verification in terms of how well people are reporting or not reporting, but I think more importantly, what the differences of opinions are. And like I said, about 50% of the cases, the differences are legitimate, and about 50% of the cases that we've done so far, it just didn't rise to the on the radar screen on in terms of risk management, or they saw it differently and there was clarification that took place, or, like I said, the opportunity for training was presented itself. So I think that as much of a struggle as it is when it's in the regulatory arm, I think that you're talking about two different functions, and that when you are, you know, if you're functioning from the position of learning, that's one thing, and the opportunity to get clarification and an opportunity to understand both sides of the story versus an opportunity to leverage and provide consequences. And I think in some instances that leverage for consequences serves the overall goal of reporting. So once they recognize there are other mechanisms throughout the department that are looking, it kind of motivates them to make sure that it's in our database, and when we're approached by these other parts of the department, we can verify that, in fact, they've recognized it as a problem, they've done something about it, and that's kind of the end of the conversation.
Great, thanks, Diana. And that is, we've teed that out a couple of times, this sort of conflict between reporting for learning versus reporting for regulation, if you will. And it's going to be, I think, an ongoing struggle for the states, and we'll see where healthcare reform winds up over time. I hope it doesn't get into the same level of confusion and difficulty, because what we need is more clarity, not more confusion in all of this. All right, given the time of the day, that was great presentations, great discussions, and that's the purpose of this type of forum, is for you to have those opportunities. And by all means, continue the discussion by email or phone calls afterwards to keep teasing stuff out. I'm going to ask Eric to take us to the next step and provide us some comments on the survey work that we recently did with your help, and Renee Webster is going to provide a few comments as well. And then I'm going to turn it over following that for a few comments. And then, then we'll turn it over for Iona to make some comments about next steps, future directions. So, Eric?
Terrific. Thanks, Peter. And I will try to be brief in my comments. If you recall, a survey was circulated following the last call, where we discussed adjudication and data validation, and specifically how states identify and then address potential underreported events. So we distributed a survey, and I will just highlight the key points. Much of what I'm going to say was covered in the memo that was circulated to members of the working group, and if folks don't have a copy of that, please feel free to email me. And then also, as I go along, if you hear something that interests you, if your state is mentioned, please feel free to kind of add to what I'm saying. I just have the comments from the survey and maybe a little bit more additional information, so please feel free to add. And also, per usual, please feel free to interrupt, and if you have any additional thoughts or questions as I go forward, please feel free. So just moving us forward, I will not go through the whole cycle of improvement slide, but this is a concept we discussed in our first in-person meeting as a mechanism for improvement, and what many of the folks on the call are working on as the cycle moves forward with the central goal of reducing harm. Without, however, the events being reported, the event recognized and analyzed slide certainly becomes a question mark. And while, as you can see, the arrows may move and and that event being recognized becomes a question mark, and I think it becomes a question as to whether harm is reduced. So folks can look at it, and communication can move forward, but the whole central point and each of the step in the cycle are not fully informed as we're missing a step. So getting to the strategies that folks mentioned, in moving from the cycle of improvement, I think a lot of folks mentioned the use of death records, Connecticut and Minnesota being two of them, and seeing if there's anything else there that hadn't been reported. That was one of two core qualitative strategies. Also looking at the existing data. Was an event misinterpreted? Was a definition not fully reported? So looking at the reports that come in and reviewing all of the adverse events and seeing whether there was one that may have occurred but was not fully reported. Also a few quantitative strategies that I thought were interesting. Chart review. Ruth, I know you had mentioned in your response that there was, as part of the Medicaid utilization review, that you have an independent contractor, I believe, come forward and do a review of all of the Medicaid records, which I thought was an interesting approach, and be interested in more, hearing more about the level of success from that. Oregon, looking at the some of the national PSO data. Ohio, looking at statistical outliers. So again, in-house comparison. So while Oregon may be looking at more of the national data, Ohio looking internally and seeing if they're outliers. And then the folks in Sacramento out in California, I know we heard on the last call from Kathleen Billingsley, who was mentioning that you've started a project with UC Davis to look at ICD-9 data and try to find adverse events from there. Moving forward here, other strategies, education. Through outreach, education is part of the strategy to really a core strategy to address the adverse events, but I also found in looking through the surveys that folks are using the education and the outreach to identify them. So through training, they have found ways to identify and catch adverse events that may not be occurring. Complaint-driven, perhaps not the best term, but that's often what's occurring in the use of surveyors. Folks in Colorado, Connecticut, Maine, and Indiana address underreporting only if a complaint is filed with the state. And then state surveyors are sent out to review the facilities and to look closely at what has occurred. And then as well, a little bit more specific, the use of attestations. I know some states indicated that they have used them in the past and are no longer. A few states that are currently using them is Washington through the quarterly surveys that they distribute. Minnesota and Oregon after each incident, and then Colorado at the time of relicensing.
Eric, this is Sydney from Oregon. We actually do attestations just once a year at the end of the year.
Ah, terrific. Okay. So good. Good to know that correction there, and I'll note that. Thank you. So moving from identification to addressing them, a core method is outreach to staff and administrators and understanding why it happened. Folks in Massachusetts, and Carla might be able to speak to any required revisions that the state folks in their hospitals are required to make to the forms and to catch these events. New Jersey, Mary, we heard from folks in New Jersey that there are phone calls and email reminders as perhaps a labor-intensive way, but I'd be interested to hearing more about whether you feel like that's been successful. You can continue.
We've had some success. As you say, it's very labor intensive. We have sent email reminders to all the liaisons and the administrators to remind them of the reporting requirements. And we also advise them that there are monetary civil fines which can be implemented. We have not done so up to this point, but we do have that available to do so. And we haven't been able to look at the numbers, the increased numbers of events reported as directly related to these emails and phone calls, but we are seeing a response from the facilities contacting us after the letters to report that they have systems in place, that those are the reasons for their lower reporting. So we have had some response from the facilities.
Interesting. And Mary, is this automated or any, by any sort?
No, actually, it's we send out mass emails through our database, but someone has to initiate that and to actually make the letter. It has to. If we wind up doing it not with the same components each time, so it's really depending on what's going on at the time with the reporting. If they're low reporting, we did recently send letters out to individual hospitals who are on the lower end of reporting to request the reason for the low reporting, if they had any systems in place, processes in place, as well as to look at their systems once again and let us know how they are identifying which adverse events need to be reported.
Terrific. And we can talk about this more as we move forward, but that's really interesting to know. Moving to other ways of addressing these underreported events, education, and specifically Anne in Maine, who's with the State Department of Health there, has found financing and co-sponsorship through the State Hospital Association, which is an interesting way in the air, as folks often have certainly declining resources financially and tight budgets. I thought that was an interesting approach to highlight. As well, best practice training, the folks in Kansas, Lynn and Utah, Iona, engage in educational outreach to train their providers on patient safety best practices. So be more interested in hearing more about whether there's a systematic approach to that and how that works. Also, as far as addressing citations or fines, really, as I note, varying usage. As Mary, you just heard, fines are an option for some states, but not all states are using it. I know the folks in Florida, and Marie's on the call and can speak to this, but have not had to fine folks as of yet, and in Indiana as well. And then there are other states such as California where fines happen and are part of the regular occurrences with underreported events. And then corrective action plans as well. This perhaps can go with education, but as well, some states indicated that it's part of a citation. And you heard it as well from Jose in New Hampshire, that states are required to do a corrective action plan once his system is up and running, and report it back and really show how they've improved and how they'll not miss these events in the future. So I guess the last slide I'd leave you with before moving on to Renee, who can really provide analysis and some thoughts and some takeaways from her perspective, is just the general takeaways, is just kind of the cost and benefits of it all as we talk about the burden of reporting, but then as well declining resources and tight budgets, and how many events are we actually going to catch? So it's really an issue I think a lot of states are doing things about, but I'd still be interested in hearing more about systematic approaches and takeaways as far as implementable approaches for the states, because there are certainly some things there, but it really depends on prerogative and folks' will to move forward.
Right.
Terrific. That was my thoughts. Peter may have stepped out for just a sec. Renee?
No, I'm sorry. I was doing the always the embarrassing moment of nattering away on mute. So thanks.
Very good.
Thanks very much, Eric. Appreciate that. Good set of slides. And why don't we go to the comments, and then we'll see if there are other questions from there. And Buster. Is Renee on the line?
I'm here. Okay.
I'm sorry, Renee.
All right.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead, Renee.
Okay. I looking over the list of everything that everyone's, the list of things came back through the survey, I is really, really interesting to see all the different things that everyone's doing. A lot of the things we found that we were doing a lot of the same things as many of the other states as I looked through the list, and do I think we're capturing all of our events here in Maryland? I probably not. I don't think anybody can realistically capture everything. I think what we have to expect is that hospitals have a system to look for these things and to get them out as best as possible and look for the best system that they could possibly have. I think we get the big things, though. I think we're getting the wrong side surgeries. I think we get the wrong, retained foreign bodies from our reporting system pretty well. And I think when we're into the grayer areas, that's where I think a lot of the under-reporting tends to occur, on whether somebody should report a fall with fracture or whether someone should report a patient who maybe didn't get their medication quite on time and then suddenly goes bad. And part of, in Maryland, what we have is a couple of advantages I think some of the other states may not have is our law has been crafted in a way that the hospitals are given very good protections from public reporting. We don't publicize out there where the, what hospitals did what. And we also don't, and our office is looked at as a medical review committee. I think we also have an advantage in Maryland where we have a state agency with the patient safety reporting. And I think it's not necessarily because I think those of us who are in that situation, it's mainly been a financial reason on why the states have done it. They wanted to go into patient safety, but they didn't necessarily want to put the bucks behind it that would have taken it to a different level. But we've tried to make the best of it and worked with it. One of the things I heard is one of the states was talking about how they use their PSO a lot for education of their programs. And in Maryland, that's very much so. The PSO in Maryland is actually the one that does most of the dedicated training for patient safety reporting, but we act as a partner with them. We're present at many of the trainings. We're there providing them input to teach hospitals what needs to be reported and what doesn't need to be reported. So we act as a partner with the PSO on those educational opportunities. And it's worked well in the past. The one thing that we have that the PSOs don't generally have is the RCAs, because the RCAs come to us in Maryland. And I think the PSO would love to have the RCAs. They really want to know what's in those RCAs. And they often have came to us to try to get some information about some of the events and what we're seeing as outcomes and all. But they don't always they're not going to get those unless we have them de-identified, and we don't have the labor to do that, but we do try to comply with some of their requests to help out on those things so that the hospitals are getting feedback. And if they get feedback back, I think you're more likely to get more reports. It goes back to what Ruth was saying that, hospitals will give you the information if they feel like there's a real benefit to it. So you can give them feedback and close that loop. It does seem to help with the reporting situation. They just don't want to report into a black hole. One of the other things that I think we're going to be looking at more and more, and I've gotten some information from some of those states that are doing the attestations, is looking at attestations, because we're losing a couple staff here, and the attestation looks like a good way of trying to encompass some of those hospitals that haven't been reporting. And I think what it is it's kind of like giving them an opportunity to self-examine themselves and look back and say, well, maybe we should have done a better job of policing ourselves here and getting the reports to the state agency. And so we're going to be looking a lot at doing something along that line. And let's see, I have one other comment here. We do use the complaints and the surveys to and our licensing surveys as a way of looking for adverse events when we look at the quality assurance part of it. And when we do that, we're trying to see, do they have a good internal process? And if they have a good internal process for their quality assurance performance improvement, they should be taking it that next step to get the reports to us and get the RCAs to us. This is not exactly about what we were talking about directly here with the different methodologies and different ways of getting reports, but actually I did have a talk earlier today with George Karahalis over at CMS, and I thought it was interesting, and many of the states may find this beneficial too, that they are CMS is looking at how they can incorporate adverse event reporting into the overall CMS regulatory process. And they were trying to get some input from us, and they're looking at information about other states and what how many other states have similar models to Maryland to incorporate more and more of this. This is part of some of the initiatives that Don Berwick is looking at incorporating into the survey insert area. So any state that could get hold of me, I told George I would get hold of I would give him names of other states that had state regulatory authority within their patient safety group so that he could also talk to them and find out what was going on across the country in a couple of the other states that have this similar type of model. Sounds like New York and New Hampshire might be people he might want to talk to. And some, if there's others of you that I'm not aware of, you know, if you can just send me an email or something, that would be great.
Terrific. Thanks so much, Renee. All good information. And, yeah, from what I'm hearing as well, CMS is clearly headed in that direction you were just describing at the end. But your other comments were certainly well well put together for this today's discussion as well. So thanks for that. Well, why don't we open it up for other comments, either to Renee or back to Eric, in terms of survey results. And I know the hour is drawing to a close, but let's keep our open discussion going as best as we can.
I have a quick question, since I haven't been in previous calls, not regularly. This attestation process, did somebody have a write-up in how that works and how to do it?
Anybody want to help today out there?
Because it sounds interesting, but I have not seen a policy and procedure type of document, how to do it or how good it is and so on and so forth. So if somebody has something that can share, that would be great.
I think Linda Furke gave us some information and Diane Rydek at Minnesota and Linda
okay.
Washington. And they provided information to Carolyn on theirs.
Yeah, I have a packet that I can send to you, Jose, send me an email, and I'll send you the instructions and the sample. This is Linda Furke in Washington.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, if needed, we can help facilitate those communications as well.
Okay.
Other comments, questions?
This is Eric just chiming in for one sec here. For those still on the webinar, I have pulled up the one from Minnesota that Diane had provided to the group, and you can see that it's really just a form letter, but as had been Diane had mentioned on the last call, had improved their reporting rates pretty significantly. And
well, you're making them take responsibility for whether they report it or not.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that, Marie. But can be completed through a mail merge as well. So.
I had a question from the last person that was talking. When she said, who was it Renee? When you said that y'all didn't, that the PSOs did not get their root cause, is that something that just your state is doing? Because I thought PSOs could get anything that the facility and the PSO wanted to give them.
And I don't know that much about what they can do under their charters or not, but in Maryland, they generally do not get the root cause analysis from the hospitals. For the most serious events, they're coming to us. They do get reports of events from hospitals, but not necessarily the RCAs.
Right.
And maybe
they can get, I mean, at least it was my understanding in Florida, they can get both. I mean, they can get we can get something and they can get something. They just have to get it, you know, they can't go into it and take something out to give to us or vice versa. But they can have the same documents in their PSO as we have. We just can't share back and forth once the line is drawn.
I don't know enough about how they're set up nationally, but historically they have not gotten them here in Maryland.
Hmm.
We are going to be having more discussion on the PSOs at the next conference call. We've had some discussions with Bill and Amy and Diane from ARC about the need to sort of provide this group with a bit of an update on where the PSOs are headed. So look forward to that at the next call.
Okay.
Other comments, other questions? All right, this is usually about the time people start to get a little bit leery and
whoever's speaking, you.
Yeah, Peter, if you're still on the line, you're going in and out there. So if you want to dial back in, please do so. Believe at this time, Peter was going to hand it over to Iona, who wanted to make some thoughts about next steps moving forward for this group. Iona, are you still with us?
I am.
Terrific. So as mentioned at the start of the call, Iona has been gracious enough to agree to serve as one of the co-chairs to provide some direction for this group moving forward. And take it from our initial stage of really informing and bringing folks together to facilitate communication to moving it forward toward identifying takeaways and actionable items for this group. And Iona and Mike and Diane from Minnesota have been talking about it and just wanted to give a moment for Iona to kind of articulate some of your thoughts here.
Thanks, Eric. So for those of us who are still left, a couple of things that I have been sort of observing and thinking about that I shared with NQF about sort of the evolution of our efforts working together across states. One that, you know, started out as a grassroots effort with NASHB supporting some of our ability to travel and meet together and kind of provide support for each other. Also doing an analysis across states looking at what are, you know, how our programs are constructed, which of us are legislative, which of us are regulatory or using rule-based, where the firewalls are, the kind of data required, et cetera, et cetera. And moving that forward from that grassroots perspective, we're now looking at ourselves from a national perspective. So a couple of the things I thought, and I'd be interested in your reactions to this, that maybe we might want to do is looking across the states at the events that we're currently receiving reports on. Number one, is there enough aggregate data across the variety of states that we have where we could do a kind of a quick and dirty NQF top 30, top 20, whatever items, and do just a number collection to see kind of where we are nationally in terms of what are the top numbered items that show up across the state. Because sentinel events are the rare events, state of Utah doesn't have that many retained foreign objects, for example, but in aggregate with the rest of you, that might be the number one item. I don't know. So
So that was one thought. So to try to get a more of a national across the state. And then also secondarily, kind of what Eric said in the survey, which is the clustering around interest areas. As I was reviewing this document and looking at all the different strategies, what one of the takeaways for me is that I'm going to take this back to my working group, my patient safety working group, and, you know, as someone's already said, I'm doing some of these, we're doing some of these in Utah, but many of which we're not, and asking them to review that and look at whether or not, which of these strategies we would want to adopt and move us forward as a state, and which we would let go, et cetera. So that kind of conversation, building on that notion of clustering, looking at states who might be working together in some areas. Here, and Eric had told me that in the Northeast, for example, there's a collaborative that's starting to develop around issues of, of definitions. And maybe they become sort of the centers of excellence in that particular area. I'm working with Minnesota to see if they might want to engage in a safe practices survey that I've taken from the NQF materials, their list of safe practices, and have developed a survey around that using a stages of change kind of approach to see if we can get a sense across Utah industry where the facilities are in any one of those safe practices. There may be other examples out there where a couple of states might be working together on a common area of interest and bringing that back to this group in terms of, you know, if it's the attestation area or if it's, you know, the data validation or verification approach, you know, really honing in on that and the tools associated with that. As I was listening to the state's presentation on the different validations, some questions that come up in my mind, for example, in the medication utilization review strategy, well, what are the criteria that you're using to identify underreporting? Is that something that we could incorporate in my Medicaid? In the death certificates verification approach, well, how are you identifying those deaths? What are the criteria that you're using, and what are you getting out of that? So a little more drill down on some of those strategies to see what the actual value might be, and there may be a couple of states that might want to work together on that strategy to actually test it out and see what value you get from that. So those are some of the ideas that I'm thinking about. And then the sort of the third area, so a national perspective, individual clustering around common interests, and then the third perspective is this notion of state and federal relationships. And Peter mentioned that he was going to bring, or Eric, one of the two, about the PSO. One of the questions that came up in past meetings was this idea of the PSO being a competitor. And maybe we ought to have some face-to-face time with the PSO organizational process and see what kind of data they're collecting at an aggregate level and what are their numbers looking like compared to the state numbers that we're seeing, and are there common areas of interest, or are we just widely different? Are they getting more reports than we are because they've got the protections that are built in or not? Those kinds of conversations. So those are the three areas I'm thinking of, and I want to just sort of share those as a starting point and get some feedback from you all in terms of what you see our needs being moving forward over the course of the next 6 to 12 months.
Thanks, Iona. It's Peter Angud. Everybody, I apologize for getting cut off there, but I'm sure Iona gave a good presentation, and as she just requested, any early thoughts, ideas, that'd be great.
Well, they all sound good. I don't have any objections to any of them. This is John Olson in Connecticut.
Thanks, John. It's always tough when you kind of make this sort of shift with groups who are convening like this to get ongoing focus and future activities. And we recognize that, especially with a group like this, everyone is already overextended and under-resourced, and so it can sound like, ooh, more added work, goody-goody, Christmas is here. But, you know, we wanted to just introduce these ideas, and we'll work with Mike and Iona and Diane to sort of help you guys formulate some thoughts and some ideas and get it crystallizing.
Hmm.
Other comments, other ideas?
This is Barbara from Illinois, and I would just second that these sound like good ideas. I like them.
The question is, what does it mean, right? The operationalizing of them. I think what I'm trying to look at is how do we structure a process moving forward that achieves whatever goals this group wants to set for themselves. I think because of NQF support, you know, there is definitely a component of the federal relationship that we might want to address. But also then what does it mean in terms of our own states and moving ourselves forward? And we are basically, in my view, we're the leaders here in this domain, locally as well as nationally. And I think that part of the struggle is that we're plowing new ground without a lot of knowledge ahead of us to know what's right, what's not right, how do we test different strategies, how do we know this one works better than that one, improving reporting, et cetera. So I think that's kind of conversation I'm looking at wanting to have, because I think this is the knowledge generation process that we're all in. The PSOs came, Johnny come lately. A lot of the states have been doing this for some time. And, you know, we haven't had the resource support to take it up to the next level, but I think we've had the perseverance and the ongoing sustainability to differing degrees, depending on your state, to move this forward. So I think there's a collective knowledge out there that we need to figure out how to capture and actually optimize over time.
Great. Thanks, Iona. Well, with that, and I know we're basically near the bottom of the hour, we've introduced the new co-chairs. We've introduced some ideas, and we encourage you to think through the fact that we are making this transition. And if you have other ideas, other thoughts, this is an open forum, and it's meant to be what you folks want, and so please don't hesitate to communicate with Iona, Mike, or Diane, and continue to communicate with Eric and myself. And as we move through to the next sets of agendas, this will become a little bit more clear for everyone, but I think that was a good introduction, so thank you for everybody. We have a moment to just ask if there is any public comment. And so, operator, if you could open up the lines and see if there are any questions, that would be helpful.
For those on the lines, if you would like to hit *0 to make any comments, please do so at this time. I'm sorry, it's *1, rather. *1 on your telephone. And there is nobody in queue.
Great. Thank you so much. Well, with that, we'll draw this call to a close, unless anyone has some final comments or questions. Hearing none, I just wanted to again thank you all for some vigorous discussion. It was educational and informative for me, again, as it always is with you folks. And as we move forward into a next stage, we look forward to getting more ideas and more thoughts as we gel forward. And we wish you all in your preparations for the coming holiday season. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Close the call.